talking about it.
But why don't, it seems so simple, we should get a log. I've been saying that for 20 years. Nobody,
why aren't they?
Oh, I used to think Dick Day.
Are you the majority leader now?
I thought the new group would probably.
I was told that to come here, and I don't know if I was supposed to sit at the table or not, but I was.
That's good. That's exactly right.
Okay. I wanted to be just separate enough so they understood that I wasn't.
Thanks, Joanne.
Summary of what's happening.
I haven't either, do
I? Yeah, right. So we can afford a few.
You should call us three, a Denny Osmond and one other normal guy, and yeah, get it done. It's not rocket science.
Boogie Miller was great about one
thing.
All right, if we're ready to go, just at the outset, as members know, with a special session, there are no constituted committees, I believe, with the exception of the Rules Committee. Is that correct, Mr. Watson? And so there's no formal action one way or another that this committee can take, but obviously the legislation in front of us, which is labeled Senate File 1 of the special session, is legislation that is primarily financial in nature. There are a couple of, I believe, tax provisions, obviously, Senator Langseth, some bonding provisions, but this was, I felt, the appropriate place to take an overview of the legislation, to hear not only from the authors, we have Senator Erickson Rope, Senator Lynch, Senator Murphy, obviously, whose districts have been the ones impacted by the flooding in southeastern Minnesota, but to have some of the staff, Mr. Watson, Mr. Mossman, who've been involved with the promulgation of this, speak with us. And obviously we have, I appreciate his being here, Commissioner Hansen and Director Showalter, as well as a couple of the people from Homeland Security, Ms. Hyde and Mr. Kerr. So obviously members, like any committee meeting, we throw it open for discussion. Amendments could be suggested. Obviously, this is a package put together by the administration, the Senate, and the House, so we're not trying to make this into a free-for-all. I think the intent is to try to get this taken care of in as expeditious a way as possible for the people impacted by what's happened around the state. But obviously, members can suggest what we'd like to do. The only place, and Mr. Watson, again, you're going to be my source for this, the only place where you could actually make a change in the legislation in front of us would be in the Rules Committee or obviously on the floor of the Senate itself. We've got the bill in front of us. I understand, Angie, you indicated what we'll be getting. If some people present don't have copies of the bill, we'll be getting other copies of the bill as well. And members, we've invited other division chairmen to participate who don't serve on the full Finance Committee. Senator Langseth, obviously, is a former member of the Finance Committee, but currently the chair of the Capital Investment Committee. Senator Higgins is here, who chairs the Public Safety Committee, or the Public Safety Division. So we wanted to make sure that other division chairs would have the opportunity, since this will be the only, I'm not sure what other committees are meeting, but this will be the fullest opportunity to go through the bill. So having laid out where we are at the outset, I should add, members, we don't have a bill summary. So you've got the spreadsheet, and you've got the bill. We don't have a bill summary. But we'd like to begin, obviously, with Senator Erickson Ropes and Senator Lynch, and I'm not sure about Senator Murphy, but senators, if you'd like to begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. It's good to see you all, and I'm so very grateful that we are back here in special session. I've spoken to many of you on the phone and through email, and it's with a broken heart, I guess, that I sit before you today looking at this legislation that's going to help out southeastern Minnesota. The very first day of the flood, I was in the mud of Stockton with the governor as we walked through and looked at a home that was sitting on top of railroad tracks. There were railroad tracks suspended in midair with no ground underneath them at all. I continued to be out in my district practically every day. I have communities where homes have slid off the hillsides and just a pile of toothpicks, it seems, at the bottom of hills. There were people rescued out of homes, out of the second story windows, in boats, hundreds of people rescued out of boats in their from their homes. There's a 91-year-old woman who didn't hear the community alarms going off at 3 a.m., and she was rescued at 5 a.m. She was standing on top of her kitchen counter to keep her head above the water and was rescued through a hole cut into her first floor roof. We have thousands of people that are homeless, thousands of people that have no jobs, and hundreds of business owners that have no inventory, no buildings. I've talked to retired couples who have had their homes paid for years and were counting on the equity in their home to get them through the last 15 years of their life. They say to me, "Senator, this is all I have," the clothes that they were wearing when they were rescued from their homes. These people have nothing. And so I'm here today to try to do the best that I can do for southeastern Minnesota. My three counties were hardest hit, but we're real resilient people down there. We may be jobless, we may be homeless, we may be carless, roadless, bridgeless, businessless, but we are not hopeless. People have just pulled together in tremendous ways. You all know this from your communities. You know, we're tough, resilient people. The community action of volunteers from all over the state and other states has been just amazing. I worked mucking out flood water and debris out of basements in Rushford and pulling up flooring, emptying wheelbarrows full of soaked possessions from people's houses onto the street corner, along with volunteers from Tennessee. It's a Lions Club from Tennessee that came up. There are people here from Ohio and all over the country. It was just an amazing thing. And in Rushford, there was one church community center that was not flooded. And without water, without lights, without electricity, they were providing meals for 600 people for breakfast, 1,500 people for lunch, and 3,000 people for dinner every day. They're still doing that. That's without water and electricity. Now, after a few days, they did get electricity, but even last weekend when I was washing dishes down there and helping them serve, they were boiling water on the stove for hot water and having water trucked in on a truck. So we're still struggling. I stood in the Capitol here last Thursday with Senator Murphy and Senator Lynch in my work boots that were full of mud of Brownsville and Hoka, Houston, Rushford, Minnesota City, Goodview, and a lot of townships in between. We have lots and lots of work to do. The FEMA checks are coming in, but I have to tell you it's been very disappointing for homeowners to have a $150,000 house, still owe thousands and thousands of dollars at the bank, and get a FEMA check for $8,000. I talked to a father last night in my living room, father of seven, and he's lost everything in his basement, bedroom furniture, furnace, water, water heater, air conditioner, all of those functional parts of the house. But since the flood didn't come up to the first floor is intact, he gets $0 from FEMA because his house is considered habitable. His seven children are scattered out to family members. He's trying to keep them into some sort of regular life by going to school at the same schools. But he has no cash assistance. They've lost their car, so he can't drive to work. I mean, I have families who have not had a paycheck for 3 weeks. And these folks are in a world of hurt. So I come before you today with our flood relief bill, and I hope you'll keep the people of southeastern Minnesota in mind. And with that, I'll pass it on to Senator Murphy and Senator Lynch for comments before we go through the bill.
Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I echo Senator Erickson Ropes. We are very pleased to be here today and to see all of our colleagues here joining us at the Capitol today, and appreciative of the governor for calling us back. The morning of the flood, I woke up and it had rained hard the night before, unusually hard. I jokingly said it was one of those nights that you're really thankful and grateful that your teenagers are home on a Saturday night and not out driving around. And the next morning I woke up, the main road to my house was closed due to floodwaters. The public golf course was under several feet of water, and a house very near to my home was engulfed and surrounded by a mudslide. That's in Olmsted County. It didn't take me very long to figure out that we had a serious situation on our hand, and I remember notifying Senate leadership a couple of hours into this, saying, heads up. And while the special session was called yesterday, I assure each of our colleagues that it was probably about an hour 26 or 30 that Senator Erickson Ropes and Senator Murphy and I contacted Mr. Watson to say we're going to need some assistance down here. The Senate Majority Leader called on the second day, asking what he could do, what could be provide, you know, what kind of assistance we needed. Said, you know, we'll come down. I said, please do come down. I said, but come down and pick me up. We're going over to Senator Erickson Ropes' district, because by far, that was where the greatest hurt and the greatest need was. This last week on Thursday, Senator Murphy, Senator Erickson Rope, and I traveled 600 miles across this state to plead the case for the people of southeastern Minnesota. And I think it's the best 600 miles I've put on during my Senate career, and I've put on a lot of miles. But when we got to Duluth, Senator Pretner Solon's district, we were asked by the newspaper why we were in Duluth. Our problem was down in southeastern Minnesota. And I said to the newspaper that I had occasion to be in northern Minnesota on two other occasions in the recent months. One was for the mesothelioma hearings on the Iron Range. One was for discussion on public school trust fund lands on the Iron Range. And so whether or not we're talking about those kinds of situations, or the 35W bridge, or the water contaminants in South Washington County, or the floods that have catastrophically hit southeastern Minnesota, we traveled those 600 miles for southeastern Minnesota, but we traveled those 600 miles because we are one state. And I believe that that is why this bill is before you today, because as Senator Murphy has said so many times the last number of weeks, our single greatest asset in the state of Minnesota is our people. And this is really an opportunity for us to stand up and stand tall and take care of that asset. Senator Murphy.
Thank you. And I'm going to talk about that asset quickly. First, you know, I appreciate everybody taking time out of their schedules today to come and help southeastern Minnesota. And there's other flood relief in here, Browns Valley up in Cook County. There's some relief in this package and a couple other places. But we're really appreciative that the legislature has acted and acted in a very prudent manner to help some of our constituents kind of get their ship right. It's never going to be fully upright, but this is going to go a long way in helping out. Let me tell you about that human capital. The I-35 bridge fell, and everybody on TV saw the heroic efforts of our EMTs and firefighters and police officers and other rescue personnel and people jumping in the water to help others out. Everybody witnessed that, and it made us all proud to be Minnesotans. What happened in our neck of the woods was many rescue efforts. The rescue effort was quadrupled. There were multiple sites in the middle of the night. The effort that the local folks down in our neck of the woods put out was second to none. And I would hope that as we proceed through the rest of the day that we try to match those efforts. Because what happened there was it was catastrophic. And in the middle of the night when people are in duck boats in raging floodwaters trying to pull people out of trees and off rooftops, you are in peril. And we almost lost some of our rescue personnel. If it wasn't for simply what I call an act of God, there would have been four other lost souls. We were very fortunate that the death toll wasn't substantially higher. Those people need to be applauded. And like I said, I think that we need to match those efforts today. Let me tell you about a family that I know in Stockton, Minnesota. Family, well, they're younger than I am. They have two kids that are still in school. They lost everything. They lost their home, their vehicles, everything. On top of that, they're both wage earners. They both had jobs. One of them lost their job because the business that they worked at was no longer on dry land. It was in the creek bottom or out in the river or wherever it went to, but it wasn't where it was the day before. They lost everything, and they lost half of their income. These are families that are still trying to struggle to make house payments on a house that's not there anymore. And in the months and years to come, we're going to have to come back and revisit some of this. Not only do we have huge problems in our state through the mortgage industry, but we have these folks down there that, through no act of their own, lost everything. And they're still paying for nothing. And I hope that this bill adds some comfort to their life. Like I said, I think we're going to be back during regular session to polish it up a little bit. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
Before I get into the details of the bill, I just, you know, I should have said this to start off with, but I do want to acknowledge the families and loved ones for seven people who perished in the flood. There were five people who died in Winona County and two people in Houston County. And Fillmore County had no deaths. So there were seven families who lost members. So let's keep them in mind today, too. And I also want to remind you that most of the communities that we've been talking about in the areas we'll be dealing with today were not in floodplains. These floods were the result of 17 inches of rain. After a week of prolonged rains, so the soils were all saturated. We have a 17-inch deluge. Rain came down off the bluffs. It came up from creeks that are normally ankle deep. So these are not people who just didn't pay their flood insurance. I mean, these are people who are living in designated safe zones, were not in floodplains, and not required to have flood insurance. I think you all have a copy of the bill in front of you, and I'll just walk through some of the major points. Article 1, your flood relief. There's about $19.5 million to the Department of Public Safety, $2 million from the general fund in state matching grants for assistance to individuals. There's $13 million in general obligation bonds for the state and local match for federal disaster assistance. And this is for publicly owned capital investment projects. There's $2 million from the general fund for the state and local match for federal disaster assistance. And this is for publicly owned capital investment projects as well. And then there's $2.5 million $1,000 from the general fund for debris removal grants to counties. Another feature is $51 million to the Department of Transportation. There's $20 million in trunk highway bonds to repair highway damage, $5 million in trunk highway funds for operating costs, $26 million in general obligation bonds for repair of damage to roads and bridges. The Department of Natural Resources will be getting $6.7 million, $4.2 million in general obligation bonds for facility damage repair, $2 million in general obligation bonds for capital improvements to other lands, and $500,000 from the general fund for stream debris removal. The Board of Water and Soil Resources has $3 million and just in the last 15 minutes or so, I think, another $1 million was added in there for flood mitigation and easements. There's a $500,000 from the general fund to the Department of Agriculture for rural disaster recovery loans. And that's been moved to Article 3. Thank you, Mr. Watson. There's $45 million to deed. $35 million of that from the general fund will go into the Minnesota Investment Fund, and $10 million in general obligation bonds for public infrastructure. $250,000 from the general fund will be given to the Minnesota Historical Society for the preservation of historic structures. There's $1 million from the Petroleum Tank Release Cleanup Fund to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency for cleanup of spilled petroleum. There's $18 million to be given to the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, $16 million from the General Fund to the Economic Development and Housing Challenge, $1 million from the General Fund to for capacity building grants, and $1 million from the General Fund for disaster relief contingency funds. Then there's $584,000 from the general fund to be given to the Department of Education. And there's quite a long list. I won't go through the details there. You may have that before you. It's on page 10. We outlined some of the specific needs for Rushard Peterson School District, Mabel Canton School District, the Houston School District, Lewiston School District, and then other school districts that have other flood or disaster-related costs. The Department of Revenue will be getting $1.5 million from general funds for property tax abatements and homeowner disaster credits. In Article 2, there's a section here on the I-35 bridge disaster, and Article 3 on other disaster assistance. Senator Murphy, do you want to go over?
We don't have an Article 3.
Okay. Article 3 has been taken out?
No, it's in there.
Okay. Article 2 is the I-35 bridge disaster. There will be $2 million from the general fund to the Department of Public Safety for public infrastructure matching funds and $55 million from the Trunk Highway Fund to the Department of Transportation for appropriate adjustments for federal funds.
Chairman.
Okay, that's page 20. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, page 20 of the bill, it shows that it's $53.237 million. The reason why that doesn't say 55 there is that we paid for the Navy divers that were here to help with the recovery effort already. That's why the number is a little bit lower.
Thank you, Senator Murphy. I think there's a 15-minute difference between the document I'm reading from and the document you may have in front of you. So there may be some small changes. Thank you. In Article 3, on page 20 as well, this is other disaster assistance. There's $2 million from the general fund to the Department of Agriculture for forage and feed grants, and $1.6 million from the general fund to the Department of Revenue for property tax relief in Browns Valley, Crookston, Cook County, and Grand Marais. Some of the key provisions in this bill the due date has been extended for business property taxes in the affected region. Secondly, the Board of Water and Soil Resources may waive requirements for cost share contracts in the disaster area. And this waiver applies to all existing and future contracts to address critical conservation problems that have resulted from flooding. And the third key provision is property tax abatements that can be offered on flooded property. And I'll stop there for any questions.
Okay, thank you. Did Mr. Watson, were you going to go through the language of the bill with? Yeah, if you could present the bill in terms of not line by line, but why we're using some of the funds and some of the language, and just enlighten us a little bit on in terms of what you've done in terms of drafting the bill.
Mr. Chairman, maybe the first place to start is on page 2 with the overall appropriation language. Now, it says in line 11 and 12 that the appropriations are all from the bond proceeds fund unless otherwise specified, but that's not actually true. I did it the opposite way, so we'll have a technical correction. The bill will look different in the Rules Committee. But all of the money here in this article is to be directed to recipients in the federal disaster area. We call it here the area included in DR 1717. You'll see that throughout the bill, and it's all for damages related to the flooding that occurred on and after August 18th. The money is all available for fiscal year 2008. That is the current fiscal year. This is not a biennial appropriation kind of bill. This is a short-term fix with the assumption that there will be additional appropriations perhaps in the 2008 regular session. That's why you see nothing in this bill for 2009. Some language that's a little bit unusual for appropriation bills, but is standard for these disaster emergency bills, is the sentence on lines 19 through 24, which says that if there's a shortage in any of these appropriations in this article, it can be covered with appropriations from other items in the article that have more than necessary. So there is a lot more flexibility than normal in moving money around within Article 1. Something that's new this year is the sentence on lines 24 and 25, which requires that those transfers be reported to the chairs of the Finance and Ways and Means Committees. It almost goes without saying that all the appropriations are one time, and it's just said this once here, so you won't see it throughout the bill. Subdivision 2.
Mr. Watson, this, the language says appropriations in this article are one time.
Okay. I'm sorry, I meant this article.
Okay.
Until sometime after midnight last night, this was just the bill.
So is there language like this in each of the other articles?
No.
Does there need to be?
Maybe.
So the other two articles are pasted in since last night. Is that what I get?
Okay, I'll take a look at that.
Okay.
Subdivision 2 is attempting to get at the problem of there perhaps being more money appropriated than is necessary, where the state may have appropriated money and the feds have appropriated money also, and the state money is used as sort of front money in anticipation of federal receipts. So this says that once the recipient gets the federal money, to the extent at least that it is intended to be replacement for the state appropriations, the state will be reimbursed. The general fund will be reimbursed. I have a technical amendment that will be distributed later to try to clean up that language a little bit. Because in most of the appropriations in this bill, what the state is doing is not fronting money on behalf of the federal government. It's much more the other way around, that the FEMA money usually gets out first, and the state needs to use its money either to meet its federal match requirement. FEMA pays the money, and then the state pays FEMA for 25% of the amount that they have paid out, or FEMA puts up some money or some other program puts up some money, and the state then matches it. So Section 3, kind of in a standard format with standard boilerplate, subdivision 2 says that that money is matching federal disaster money. Section 12.221 is the general emergency management section that talks about us entering into agreements with FEMA, which we have done for many years. And it's under the terms of those agreements with FEMA that it's determined that some programs might get 100% federal money and some 25 and some are different.
Mr. Watson, that's based on federal statute?
Based on the federal law, yes. And so the agreement between the state and the feds for us to do our part when the feds put up the money that we will pay them, reimburse them for the 25% that they fronted.
So is this comparable language to what we've had in previous instances, say Red River, for instance?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Over the last 10 years that we have been having these special bills to address major floods and tornadoes, most of the provisions in this bill are the same kinds of things as we have had either in the most recent big flood, which was the Roseau flood of 2002, or the most recent tornado, big tornado, which was the one that hit St. Peter and eliminated the city of Comfrey back in 1998. Between the two of them, almost everything in Article 1 of this bill is taken from those precedents.
Okay, thanks.
Notice in lines 23 to 28 that whereas the normal treatment of a local match in a FEMA program is that FEMA puts up 75%, the state puts up 15%, and the locals put up 10%. In this case, in these mega disasters, what the state has done is relieve the local government of their 10% burden. So the state is doing the full 25%. The debris removal note is for removal that's not covered by FEMA. The landowners, private insurance doesn't cover it for one reason or another. FEMA doesn't cover it. That's what this $2.5 million is for. And note that this is for rural residences and farms. It's not for cities, and it's not for businesses. Section 4, transportation. Senator Erickson Ropes indicated the $5 million is for DOT operations. The $20 million is trunk highway bonding. $26 million is local road and bridge bonding. And there will be a clarifying amendment to spell out that this is county, city, and town roads, roads and streets. Section, let's see. That language that begins on line 4.29 is requiring the local government, the county, city, or town that's going to get the grant money to submit a plan to the Commissioner of Transportation before they get the money. And in this case, starting on line 5.4, if the county, city, or town does receive federal money for a project that was eligible for federal money, the federal money wasn't available, so the state decided to front the money for these road repairs out of the transportation fund, then when the federal money is received, it will be put back into the transportation fund.
Okay, and Mr. Watson, with all the discussion about transportation and bridges and the cost that we assume, Senator Langseth would know better than myself, Senator Murphy, but the costs of bridge repair throughout the state. With the language that says damaged or destroyed, is there a definition of damaged, or is that simply a subjective consideration by the department?
Mr. Chairman, I think that is not a term of art.
Okay. So if you go through the application process to the department, they can, with their engineering staff, make that determination?
That's my understanding. Maybe somebody from the DOT is here to say whether they've got a pre-existing definition of damage.
Sir Murphy, do you?
Mr. Chairman, the last time I spoke on behalf of the department, I kind of got crossways. So.
Okay, we'll excuse you then.
Thank you.
Well, that's okay, Ms. Watson. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, just so folks know, though, the department's not going to do anything to hang up this money. If there's a bridge that's been legitimately impacted by the floods, they're going to get the money, and I'm sure and have every confidence in our local engineer down there to make sure it all works right.
My question was a little bit more from the opposite direction, that if there's a bridge that needs repair for a lengthy period of time, is there the ability to say, well, we've incurred that much more damage because of the flood, and we'd like to secure the money right now. So not that the department would try to politicize the bridge repair, but whether or not, if there was a repair need prior to the flood.
Well, Mr. Chairman, in that regard, there's approximately 1,100 bridges that are structurally deficient right now in our state that we know of. $790 million of that cost is to these types of bridges, our local bridges, city, county, township bridges, about $1 billion worth of state bridges that are structurally deficient. I don't think that because bridges were deficient to begin with that had structural deficiencies that were impacted by the flood. I can't see how we won't fix them, regardless of what shape they were in prior to the flood.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Well, Mr. Chair, along those same lines, so the $26 million here, who arrived at that number, and is that projected to be enough to fix all the damaged bridges in this area, in this flooded area?
Yeah, let's take the question from Senator Anderson. But what my hope was to go through the language with Mr. Watson, and then we've got Commissioner Hansen here to talk about how they arrived at the various figures in the bill.
Okay, but that's fine. I can hold that.
Okay. All right. Mr. Watson?
Mr. Chairman, moving on to page 5 in the Department of Natural Resources, the facility damage appropriation is fairly straightforward. The flood hazard mitigation grants are putting more money, $2 million more money, into our ongoing program that, and Senator Langseth's bill every couple of years has another $10, $20, $30 million for that program statewide. This $2 million is just for the 7 counties covered by the bill, and the conditions on this money are essentially the same as the conditions that would be in the omnibus bill. Subdivision 4 on the stream debris removal, I'm told that the department would like to have that language broadened a little bit to be any kind of storm cleanup that needs to be paid for from the general fund rather than from bond proceeds. So there'll be a little tweak to that language coming along later. The Board of Water and Soil Resources, this is putting money into the conservation enhancement program, conservation reserve program. It's part of RIM. So it's the kind of thing that we give them more money to do every few years, but this is more money in this particular area. And you'll see on lines 22 to 29 is a waiver of the usual requirements, particularly the limits on grant amounts and the cost share requirements. A local recipient may have to come up with 25% or 50% of the cost normally, but that would not be required for these grants. Now, Senator Erickson Ropes indicated $1 million has shown up this morning for additional spending by the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and there is an amendment in process to add that $1 million to this section, and if it's done by the time we are out of here, then you'll be able to take a look at that.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On lines 6.19 and 6.20, is the purpose of this money just for fish and wildlife habitat, or is it, or could it be used to restore ag land, farmland that might have been damaged? In the Roseau flood, what happened is there was a significant amount of erosion that went cross-country and actually, you know, eroded kind of gullies in farmers' fields. And if I read this correctly, it looks like it can only be used to support the protection of fish and wildlife habitat.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf, I think you're focusing too much just on that second phrase. Before that, it says, in order to protect soil and water quality. And that's the general purpose of the soil and water conservation districts, is to protect and preserve soil and water quality. So it's not limited to the support and fish and wildlife habitat. The Pollution Control Agency money, as Senator Erickson Ropes indicated, is for the Petro Cleanup Fund. This money is available. There is money in the fund that can be used to clean up petroleum spills, but it's normally restricted just to cleaning up the spill itself. And this special language here in lines 5 to 8 allows the use of that money to rehabilitate an entire building, even if it's only partially damaged due to the petroleum, and if perhaps the rest of the damage is due to the flooding. Employment and Economic Development, the largest appropriation is for the Minnesota Investment Fund. This, again, is an ongoing program that's been very popular over the years. People are always fighting to put more money into this program. But it does have a number of requirements for eligibility, the kinds of businesses that are eligible, the amount of match that they may have to put up for a grant, the loan repayment requirements that may be in place. But as you'll see on lines 729 and following to the bottom of the page, and then the first four lines on the next page, for this appropriation, although it's going into that program, the usual statutory program requirements are being waived. And what the program is going to look like on lines 29 to 31 is all going to be established by the commissioner, new criteria and requirements. People who are eligible for this include business, and there will be coming along a technical amendment to clarify that nonprofit organizations are eligible for this money too. They need not be a profit-making business. And something that...
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lynch.
Just before we go on, I just want to clarify in Section 8, that those monies, they're, particularly in Senator Erickson Rope's district, she has businesses, communities that the vast majority of the business community has been devastated by this flood. And it was strong intent of the authors to do everything that we can to support that business infrastructure so that those towns and communities can be rebuilt. And I want to also call attention to the language on page 8, section 8.5 to 8.13. And this is a substantial amount of resources, and it's a substantial commitment that we have made to this part of the state. And the language that has been put in here that is new requires that the commissioner submit a report of what is transpiring with those funds. to the chair of the Senate Finance and the chair of the House Ways and Means Committee.
Senator Erickson Robes.
Chair, I'd also like to clarify, because I know there are people in the room and also folks back home that are very concerned, you know, about the nursing homes, and let them know that in this particular spot is where the nonprofit organizations like Head Start or SEMCAC, the local nursing homes that were extensively damaged and one of the largest employers in town, if they don't get money out of this fund, they'll be closing. So I just want to make sure that folks know that besides the small businesses being able to apply for grants from the MIF fund, that it also covers those nonprofits.
Sir Neville.
Mr. Chair, given that a lot of the normal criteria are being waived and we want to help the people to the maximum extent that Senator Lynch is talking about, what is being envisioned? I mean, there must be some at least concept of what kind of grants and or loans you expect will be issued for this, what is it, $35 million? Are we going to be giving mostly grants? Are we going to be giving mostly loans? Do you have some concept of how that money will be ultimately distributed?
Senator X. Ropes.
Mr. Chair, Senator Neville, thank you for the question. We have indicated on line 7.31 that these will be managed by the commissioner. I believe that's Commissioner Dan McElroy.
Chairman. May I ask a follow-up?
Yes, Sir Neville.
So has Commissioner McElroy, I mean, are we just giving $35 million to the Minnesota Investment Fund without some commitment on how it's going to be handled? This is all going to be developed afterwards? Or have they given you some indication how they likely will handle that money?
Chairman, on that issue, I think what I read out of this economic investment fund is that we're giving a heck of a lot more latitude by the local units of government. So on 729 and 730, it talks about the criteria and requirements must be locally established and approved by the commissioner. So it seems to me that the people back home that are having the problems have a lot to say about them. And all they have to do is get their requirements and establish what they want back home and then make their case to the commissioner. So I think, in my judgment, this is good because, why should just the commissioner decide or why should we decide? We don't really have our fingers on the pulse of this stuff. So that's what I get out of 729 and 730. Is that how the authors look at that? Let the people that have the problems tell us the problem. Tell the commissioner and get their point across, and he should hopefully approve what the folks back home are looking at.
Right. Mr. Chair and Senator Metzen, thank you very much. That's exactly right. It's a piece that is based on local control. And the people that have lived with the damage for the last 3 weeks know the areas that need the most. And I think they can, again, they're most accountable to the people. And yet the legislature has to be apprised of the plan before things move into action. So I think there's enough checks and balances there. But the plan is coming from the local up to the legislature.
Sir Neville.
Another follow-up, but still on the same topic. I made a visit to Rushford as well, and in my discussions with some folks there, apparently the dike that went and correct me if my facts are wrong, but as I understand it, there was a dike put up along the Rush Creek, and that had the effect of taking most of Rushford out of the floodplain.
Yes.
But then the dike didn't work. When we do historically these kinds of natural disaster relief bills, do we require as a condition for getting either a grant or a loan that you get the flood insurance now? I mean, in hindsight, most of the people in Rushford, for example, I don't think had flood insurance because they weren't in the floodplain. But now that we know that they're susceptible to it, should we require that they get flood insurance prospectively?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator. My understanding is that for a community to accept FEMA money, they have to comply with a flood insurance program.
Okay.
And just a little bit of a I don't know if it's a correction or a thought about your characterization about the levee failing. I don't believe the levee failed. There have been a couple points about how the levee was breached because of trees getting in the way of a lower railroad bridge that hung over the river. And had those trees been out of the way, there wouldn't have been a backup. And the levee was breached for a couple different reasons. One is the 17 inches of rain that came rushing through that was unexpected. And then the second thing is log pileup.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, so FEMA, as a condition of the FEMA money, the folks who get this money will also have to prospectively have flood insurance. That's your understanding?
That's my understanding.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, and whichever author would be appropriate, first let me just express my concern that at one point some of this $35 million was earmarked for the residential facilities, the child care facilities, and the health care and other social service programs, and now it's lumped in with this larger program. The Commissioner of Deed doesn't really administer programs for nursing homes or child care facilities or other social services that are provided by the Department of Human Services. And my concern is that this $35 million isn't going to cover everything. And so then do we have some assurance that these social service programs that are provided to vulnerable citizens on behalf of the state will be able to get back in business?
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, thank you for the question. The authors sitting before you did not put these provisions in. My understanding, it was one of the agreements that were reached between House leadership, Senate leadership, and the governor's office to include them all in the same subdivision. And again, I think that's the local piece we had talked about. Most people, for example, in the city of Rushford, again, if you're looking at damage to the local nursing home and the vast amount of people that they employ in the city, I think the local decision is the best place for those things to be made, because I believe the city of Rushford is going to support money going to the nonprofits. So actually, I'm pretty hopeful for the local community to make those good decisions and not just shuffle all of the money off to small business. They're going to be trying to do the best thing for their community overall. So I think there'll be a lot of intense pressure and accountability at the local level to be doing the right thing across the board, looking at child care and nursing homes, the nonprofits, as well as getting small business back on their feet.
Well, hopefully we'll remember that when and if anybody's here asking us, you know, telling us they didn't get any or they didn't get enough when we're back here for a regular session.
And to your point, Senator, I don't know that this is enough. We're envisioning this bill as a first step of emergency flood relief down to the community, and I imagine we'll be getting requests as the numbers are more clearly defined, even over the next 18 months, as to what they're going to need. I would imagine we'll continue to revisit.
Mr. Chairman and Senator, usually in any flood situation, you can ask Senator Langseth. Everybody is not made whole. But usually the nursing homes and the facilities serving people with mental disabilities and the daycare centers get made whole because they are providing those services on behalf of the state of Minnesota. So that would be my expectation out of this. And this is, you know, like about the most strange arrangement I've ever seen to pay for it. Usually we pay for it through the Department of Human Services straight up, and it always has happened in the past. This strange arrangement, I'm not sure about.
Sarah Lynch.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Senator Berglund, your points are very well taken, and I assure you that the authors had some of those very same thoughts and conversations. I will point out that on page 13 there is a small human services provision that speaks more directly to residential services, nursing homes. And that particular provision is seeking to address, there are residential facilities in some of these communities that no longer have, their beds aren't full because the residents have been displaced. And so we are seeking to offer them some direct aid so that their doors can continue to remain open. But your comments are duly noted.
Mr. Chairman,
Sarah Berglund.
As long as you're pointing out Section 17, I have a question about that section also. My question is, and I think that this is a good provision, but my question is, are the workers who work at these facilities going to be continuing then to receive their paychecks? Because that's basically what most of the payment made to a provider is for. And I understand the importance of making sure that they can make their property payment to the bank so they aren't losing their facility, but most of it is not that type of a payment. Most of it is for the staff to be providing services. And so will the owners of the facility be okay, but the workers not be okay, or will they be getting paid also?
Is that the commissioner?
Did somebody have a response, or? Senator?
Oh, Mr. Chair, the senator asks very good questions, and, you know, we hope that the commissioner and the folks that are overseeing this fund would do the right thing. And again, as Senator Lynch said, this piece that you're looking at is a compromise piece of the three groups that have been working on this bill. And Mr. Watson had an additional thing to add.
Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman, and Senator Berglund, Section 17 is sort of like declining enrollment aid for school districts, where the provider staffed up, arranged for space, signed contracts to take delivery of supplies and materials, and then all of a sudden finds that the residents who were supposed to be there and provide the money to pay all those fixed costs are not going to be there. So this gives a short time, 6 months, for the providers to continue receiving that money, provided they, on lines 18 to 20, certify that they intend to resume normal operations as soon as the recovery from the flood damage permits. People who are going out of business, not going to be there anymore, are not supposed to receive this money. And whether they receive it or not depends on the Commissioner of Human Services, that says line 13 may continue, determining that these are people who are in the business, trying to provide the business, they just don't have the revenue. And I'm not aware of any conversations with Human Services about how they intend to work individually with providers to make sure that they are continue to do what they can to provide the services, but presumably that is what they will do and not just take the money and run.
Okay. Let me remind members that we've got, Mr. Watson's got 18 pages to go through the bill. We have Commissioner Hansen waiting to spend some time with us relative to the direct appropriations, and this is our only crack at it. So it's about 3:30. So, Mr. Watson, if you want to continue.
Mr. Chairman, are we ready to move to page 8, subdivision 3, the public infrastructure?
Yes.
that this is the money that is used to repair, restore the various water and sewer plants that have been destroyed in the flooding. It's not for bleach to clean them out. It's for capital improvements to get them back up online and working again. again, the usual criteria that require a certain amount of local match and limit the grants to communities that have maybe limited a property tax base and so forth, those criteria are waived for the purposes of this. The Housing Finance Agency, the Challenge Grant Program is one that's been it's popular during the regular sessions, and it's been popular during disaster sessions to as a way to get money to people who need housing. Their housing has been destroyed. They may be able to get grants or loans to rebuild their housing and get back on their feet. But again, the assistance requirements that would normally be in place in lines 7 to 11 are waived for the purposes of this program. The capacity building grants are really administrative money to develop the local plans for how they're going to be recovering. The Disaster Relief Contingency Fund is one that is available under current law, and the agency has the authority to transfer money from various of its other programs into the fund, but it has been hard hit, apparently, and this is a way of restoring it. The Historical Society, there'll be a little technical amendment to that historic structure cleanup. Education, the first piece on page 10, line 6, the enrollment impact aid is a fixed dollar amount of $53.94 per pupil who's been lost as a result, or pupil unit lost as a result of the flood. So that dollar amount may vary if the number of pupils is a little different from what's been estimated. The facilities grant, we talked about that a little bit, I think, earlier, as well as the transportation money. These three districts have identified with rough accuracy what their likely needs will be, but they and others may have needs that are not quite clear now, and that's the reason for subdivision 6 on page 11. And there will be an amendment to broaden the use of that money so that it's not just for facilities, but it's also for the transportation and the enrollment impact aid. Section 12, revenue, is the money that goes into the program to reimburse the local governments for their property tax abatements. I'm not sure if Senator Erickson may have said that there is authority under current law for the counties and taxing districts to abate property taxes to help out the homeowners and the businesses, but that's just a loss to their treasury. And what we have done in these disasters is appropriated state money to reimburse the local governments for those abatements that they have given. Section 13 is just the cost of selling the bonds that are authorized in Section 14, the three different kinds of bonds. Normal GO bonds in Subdivision 1, trunk highway bonds in Sub 2, and the transportation fund, that was for the local roads and bridges in Subdivision 3. The waivers in Section 15, Subdivision 1, the most important limit that's waived there is $150,000 maximum grant limit for the flood hazard mitigation grants. In Subdivision 2, the Bowser waiver is primarily for the cost-sharing requirements. Section 16 has to do with the $3 million grant that the Department of Labor has already made to the Department of Employment and Economic Development. It's available under federal law when there is a presidential disaster declared, and it's intended to be used to hire people who are living within the area and have been displaced as a result of the disaster to do the work on the reconstruction and the cleanup of the area. There will be a technical amendment here to identify the dollar amount, $3 million, since it's now known, and make the appropriation, and strengthen a little bit the direction to hire those local residents. We've talked about Section 17. There will be a technical amendment on that to to clarify it a little bit. Section 18 is those property tax abatements that we talked about and the reimbursement. Note that what the legislature does is decide about how much they want to give in total in property tax abatements, and that amount then is allocated among the taxing jurisdictions in proportion to the amount of abatements that they have given.
And Mr. Watson, if you'll remind me, have we done that previously with the other legislation in the past?
Mr. Chairman, pretty much every time. Okay. Another typical provision from past bills is the flood loss city replacement aid, where we give them what amounts to local government aid to replace their loss of net tax capacity as a result of the flood. Now, there is a difference between this and the last time we did it for Roseau. There, yes, we provided the aid to the local governments in the year after the flood, but then what we giveth in one year, we took it away in the next year by reducing the amount of local government aid, and that, in effect, saved the state treasury, but it caused the burden of the disaster to be shared among all of the other recipients of local government aid. In this case, the money is coming from the general fund, and it will not cause a reduction in the amount that the other cities would get. The due date for business property taxes is extended. People who were supposed to be paying their taxes this fall can have until next May to pay their taxes. They just have to apply for that and say that they were in this flood area. Section 21 is so similar to what we have done in previous years, you'll see it poking its head up in several places here in the old language. For example, page 17, paragraph E, line 28, as a result of the April 97 flood, they had this. And then on line 18.10, we had property damage as a result of the 1998 tornado and so forth. So we've been doing this on a regular basis for at least the last 10 years. The part that applies to these seven counties begins on line 19.23, and it's the same concept that a person's agricultural homestead, if it's wiped out, so the person has to move away, no longer living in the house, if he or she applies to the county assessor and says, hey, I had to move out of my house because the flood destroyed it, then the assessor will continue to assess it at the more favorable homestead rate, notwithstanding that the person isn't living in there anymore, provided that their new residence is within 50 miles of one of the parcels that was flooded. Section 22 allows the Commissioner of Revenue to waive the usual requirements for truth in taxation notices, and I think there will be a technical amendment coming along to make that uncodified, because it's just for this 1 year. It's not a permanent thing. I think you looked already at the appropriations for the public safety FEMA match and the federal money for the bridge. Article 3, the forage and feed grants.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
On Article 2 on the bridge collapse, I think you mentioned something earlier about the state and local match in that first section. You had a similar section on that somewhere at the beginning of the bill on something else. Is this $2 million, and does that cover a local match or just a state match?
That's the local match.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, I'm not so familiar with this, since this basically came up about yesterday.
Is anyone here familiar with it, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Anderson, the bulk of this money, I believe, was going to be used for the match on some of those rescue efforts and other things, more police officers being at the scene, firefighters. There's a lot of overtime out there, and those costs need to be picked up. I know that the city of Minneapolis and Hennepin County have been working overtime to, you know, try to make their ends meet, and I think that this is directed at some of that. As you can see, it's assistance to political subdivisions, and I believe that's what that money is for.
So, Mr. Chair, yeah, I just want to clarify that if Minneapolis had to come up with a match, would this cover that? Or would this, is that the $2 million, is that intended to help pay for their share?
Mr. Chairman, it is.
Mr. Hansen's nodding. And then you said, you know, all the aid for first responders and rescue and all those different parts of the recovery effort, is that under the $53 million appropriation?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, Senator Anderson, can you?
The second question.
The second question.
I think
question.
We had an answer to the first question.
Yes.
So the you mentioned help to Hennepin County and Minneapolis for all the public safety response, the health, public works, and the first responders. Is that intended to come under that $53 million in Section 2, that would be reimbursable under that money?
Mr. Chairman, the
we had that phrase first.
The $55 million that was part of that federal grant was that's just for the state's portion of the bridge. That's my understanding. That money is being appropriated to the Commissioner of the Department of Transportation to be used as a fix the bridge. The $2 million, there's a long category here of things that could be used, but.
Well, Mr. Chair, you mentioned the Navy divers were already subtracted out of that, so that's obviously part of the recovery effort. You said that came out of the $55 million?
Right.
So
that was taken off the top to reimburse that.
But I guess we need some clarity.
I think Mr. Mossman can help.
People have.
Mr. Mossman can help us a little bit. Mr. Mossman?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, and members, the bridge disaster is eligible potentially for both federal emergency management assistance under FEMA and emergency assistance under the Federal Trunk Highway or Federal Highway Administration. That disaster is kind of the inverse of the typical natural disasters in that most all of the money will be paid out from the Federal Highway Administration, but there are also costs that might be eligible for FEMA assistance from that bridge collapse. So Section 1 that you were asking questions for about earlier would be money to the Department of Public Safety to fund local match and state match requirements for costs that are eligible for FEMA assistance and refunded through that program. The $53 million, which amounts to the $50 million that Congress has appropriated of its $250 million authorization for the bridge, as well as $5 million that was made available immediately under the Federal Emergency Assistance Program for costs related to the bridge collapse. Those amounts have been made available to the state from the federal government, and the short answer to your question is yes. That money then will be able to pay not only for bridge costs, but also upfront costs that have been incurred for debris removal, first responders, and other things. What will happen is that there will be first an effort to see what's eligible for the Federal Highway Program and then what's eligible for FEMA. And these two provisions together cover both of those federal sources.
But so, Mr. Chair, I guess then the clarification is even though it's been put into the Trunk Highway Fund, that's the one that's constitutionally set aside, some of that money will be allowed federal money to be used for some of the other the relief efforts in addition to the bridge construction.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson,
Murphy.
Now I understand what you're getting at. Yes, I was in the Marine Corps. It takes a little longer, okay?
It's Navy veterans. There's
pay. Yeah, pension. We've used money in instances like this to pay for quite a few things, as long as they're directly related to the collapse of the bridge. A good example would be Senator Marco at one time had issues with some of the things that were going on down in Newport when they were redoing that section of road. They had to add some transit services to, you know, get the cars off the road. We paid for that with money like this. So there's all kinds of things that, are going to qualify for this money under that, as long as they're attributable to the collapse of the bridge.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, I don't imagine that they've actually been able to conclude how much the cleanup of the bridge is going to cost, since they're still in the middle of doing it. Mm-hmm. And so if the money that's in this bill is not adequate to cover all of those costs, mm-hmm. the emergency costs and the cleanup costs, will there be a way to get those costs covered later?
February. Next February.
Well,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, it's my understanding, talking with the mayor and the folks at MnDOT, that the money, the cash that is going to be available between now and when we start next session is going to be adequate. It might be just barely, but they've been saying that the money that will be provided through the federal government is going to hold us till next session. But I can guarantee everybody in this room that next session we're going to have a transportation bill, or there's going to be a lot of projects that are going to be put off, projects that have been planned for 10, 15, 20 years. They're going to have to be put on hold because there's not enough money in the department to continue to operate as we've been operating.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Berglund.
And Senator Murphy, I agree with you that we need a transportation bill. It's a shame we aren't able to move forward at this time with one. But the concern that we have is if the federal money and this state money are not adequate to cover the recovery and cleanup costs, will there be an opportunity in February to finish mm-hmm. making that appropriation available?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, yes. I mean, every year we have a little bit of cleanup work that needs to be done here and there. Senator Langseth's always been good about trying to cobble together a bonding bill that directs some money for local bridges and for the department for some spending authority there as well.
Right. We just have to get it signed.
Right. We just need to have a bill that either gets signed or gets into law by extraordinary measures.
Chairman.
Senator Medicine.
An example of that, I think, is the Moorhead Rosso issue. I mean, we had 2 or 3 years of kicking in a few more dollars, I believe, you know, as we went through the process. So right. We're not closing the door here to anything as far as I'm concerned.
Mr. Watson.
Chairman, moving on to Article 3. Article 3 is different from 1 and 2. In that it is not limited to southeast Minnesota, and it's not limited to floods. It is statewide, and it covers disasters, including droughts and fires, as well as floods. On page 21 at the top is the $2 million Senator Erickson Robes talked about for agricultural producers who have suffered losses either due to drought or flood. And there is a maximum for the livestock losses of $5,000 for a single producer or entity. But basically, it's an attempt to help these farmers cover their losses.
We're in Israel.
Section 2 is the one that Senator Erickson Robes referred to as being in Article 1, which it was until very recently when it was broadened to be available to farmers throughout the state. I had mentioned that all the appropriations in Article 1 were one time and were only for the first fiscal year. But as you see in Article 3, things are set up a little bit differently. Section 3 has appropriations both for 08 and 09, and whether it's one time or not is separately indicated in each appropriation. By the way, the Crookston and Browns Valley and Grand Marais and Cook County, the sections 3 to 5 are all provisions that were in the tax bill that was sent to the governor but not signed. That was vetoed. Section 6 is an example of language that's now statutory that had begun at one time in a previous disaster. You see it talks about disasters or emergencies, so it's our a way of covering on a permanent basis the kinds of problems that result from various kinds of disasters, and it's the way that homestead property can be reassessed in light of a disaster. It's an effort by the Department of Revenue to clean up that ongoing process. I understand that they have been working further on this and will have an amendment, I think, for this meeting that will kind of completely rewrite that whole section. Also added to this section will be an exemption from sales tax liability for, is it construction materials used in responding to a drought or disaster or something? At any rate, that will be in this upcoming amendment. The governor had referred in his press conference to waiving certain fees and assessments, and this gives him even broader authority to waive fees in either this year or next year due to a disaster. And that's the end of the bill.
Okay, questions for Mr. Watson. Senator Frederickson.
Places where there appear to be drafting errors, should I raise them now or talk to Mr. Watson outside the committee area?
If you'd like to do it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, would this be a good time to pass out the technical amendment that addresses those, or either one?
Sure.
Want to mention it, and I'll just tell you whether it's covered already.
Okay, I'll quickly go through them. I think there's three. I picked them up as you were going through it. Page 15, line 7. Delete B.
Oh, right.
Is B, yeah. Is B entitled?
Page 22, line 4. Delete from the general fund.
Yes.
Line 3, 2.
And line 22.3 after general insert fund.
Insert fund, yes. Page 25, line 27, delete 2 TO and insert 4.
Excuse me, what line was that?
Line 27. Delete 2 and insert 4.
Put in any periods.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Good eye.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Watson, in on page 25, I think that's Article 3. Okay, Section 7, where the governor is given the authority to have a temporary waiver of fees, line 2524, where it says, for fiscal years 2007 and 2008, and then if you go down to 25.31, this section expires December 31st, 2007. Is there a contradiction there?
Looks like it.
What we should do is
Except that, Mr. Chairman, we are now in fiscal year 2008, even though this is 2007. So this would be talking about really the first half of fiscal year 2008.
I guess, Mr. Chairman, I was just kind of thinking in terms of local fees that might arise sometime in late 2008
period.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sumpf, are you suggesting it should be longer than 7/31/07?
I'm thinking that we could do without that line 31.
To extend it to the end of June?
I guess, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Watson, maybe if we change 2007 to 2008 on line 31, that would do it too.
So, Mr. Chairman and Senator Stump, that gives the committee three choices. Leave the language the way it is, where it would expire December 31 of this year. Delete line 31 so it would expire June 30th of next year, or change the 07 to 08 on line 31 and have it expire December of next year.
Hmm. Mr. Chairman and Mr. Watson and members, just from my experience with the different floods in the valley, usually it takes, it's a fairly long ongoing rebuilding process, and I'm guessing that as these communities start looking at, I'm sure a lot of stuff will be done next year, which will be in 08, and it probably would be to their benefit if we extended on line 31, 2007 to 2008.
Is that a motion?
I'd move that if some.
Well,
I don't know if that's.
Senator, I don't know if you're here. You know, we have no jurisdiction to make amendments here. So we can note that in the Rules Committee. Mr. Watson, if you can keep track of this. And I assume the language on the fees is uniform for any fee that might be. I mean, there are no exceptions to fees. It's.
Yes.
Okay. Fees
all right. Further questions for Mr. Watson? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Watson. Senator Senjum?
Mr. Chair, I'm not a member, but would you
sure,
take a question?
Go ahead.
Perhaps, Mr. Watson, and I'm looking at page 7 on the Minnesota Investment Fund, where it refers to the term businesses, and we all know about the coffee shop on Main Street and the hardware store and so on. But is there any limitation on what kind of a business that might cover? As, for instance, a larger elevator, a cooperative power company, a DM&E railroad, would any or all businesses be technically eligible?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Senjum, I think, yes, any and all businesses would be eligible. The limitations in the sections referred to on lines 33 and 34 target this money to the kinds of businesses that you would normally think ought to get this money and keep it away from the kinds of businesses that you would think normally wouldn't get the money. But those are all waived. So the extent to which the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development would continue to apply those criteria is not clear, but I don't know if the Commissioner is here to say what he would intend to do.
Thank you.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I might...
Sir Murphy.
Might also mention that Senator Sinjum's been more than helpful in you know, attending meetings, making sure that people are plugged into the right spot, and his help's been very appreciative.
Okay, thank you. All right, thank you, Mr. Watson. Then let's go, if we can, to Commissioner Hansen and Mr. Showalter to talk about the dollars involved with this as to, and Commissioner, as you're walking up, I guess obviously we haven't talked about your testimony. I think, Commissioner and Mr. Showalter, what we'd like to listen to is some description of how you've arrived at those figures. A particular question of mine as you're going through this is I know that was it last week the governor issued an executive order with a reallocation. And so I'm wondering what's been incorporated in the bill we have and what part of the reallocation remains. And I think I've got some other questions, but if you can try to keep that one in mind. So, Commissioner Hansen, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
And I'm sorry, Commissioner. You know, members, keep in mind, you've got the spreadsheet as well as the bill. So, Commissioner.
The quick answer to your second question about the reallocations the governor announced last Friday, that is, this package is in addition to that. So you take the, I think, whatever the now bottom line is now, 219.3. At least that's what I have on my sheet. And you add the reallocation of the $32 million, and then that's your total. It's to the question of how did we come up with the amount, you start with the FEMA disaster estimation, and they only estimate with disasters up to the point where they know you qualify. And then it takes much longer for them to complete their assessments. That is why in past floods in 97 up in Senator Langseth's area and in 2002 in Senator Stump's area, we ended up not having legislative action for about 3 months afterward. This time we started with the $67 million, took that into account, and went through in each area working with local officials in our agencies as well as the legislators, the senators you had here and their House counterparts, and tried to come up with an estimate higher, as high as we could, the needs in each area. And, you know, I can, if you have specifically as we go through, I can certainly talk about specifics, but it was really just working piece by piece through our agencies and local officials to try to get to what we believe to be the right amount, and recognizing that I think it was a couple of years by the time we finished the, in fact, I think we're still, Senator Langseth, working on flood mitigation projects in some of the areas from East Grand Forks and others.
Mr. Chair, it took 10 years to get East Grand Forks completed, and Breckenridge is going to take over that. And so obviously this is not the end. It's just this will most likely get us to February without yes. any problem, and then we can do whatever we want to do. But I think this is sufficient to get them started with things.
And Commissioner, I know that I've got in front of me the governor had sent out a letter on August 27th that talked about some of the process, so I'm assuming that framework is still the one you were working from. Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Hansen, one thing I'd be interested in is what the funds were that the governor reallocated, the $32 million. For instance, in the Housing Finance Agency, where did that money come from? Was it from the first-time homebuyer money? Was it from, where did it come from? What other programs are going to be less in number because of the reallocation?
Mr. Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Senator, we can get you some more detail on that. I don't have the specific programs that were reallocated amongst that $16 million. Certainly part of the discussion in additional appropriations in this disaster relief bill was that some of that money would not be reallocated, so that about $8 million of that 16 initial administrative reallocation would be put back, so that there would be still more resources, or some of those resources for other state parts of the state would still be in place.
Well,
Mr. Chair, that didn't make any sense.
Mr. Showalter, it makes sense to me, except that's what I'd ask the commissioner. And Commissioner, there's a little bit of a contradiction between the two of you. Because Commissioner, you indicated that that the reallocation was on top of what was in the bill, and now Mr. Showalter, you're indicating so.
Exception, Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins. The $16 million for the Economic Development Challenge under the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency is a flexible pot of money that, and Tanya Orr is here from the Department from Housing Finance, that can be used for above and beyond the reallocation that we did last Friday, or if we have enough, if the $16 million that we used last Friday is enough, some of that can be redirected back to the programs that we reallocated from. It all gets to the question. We don't, at this point, we're still assessing the damage and having flexibility and reallocating money back to those programs is important to us.
I don't know if you can add. Ms. Orr, did you want to add something?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tanya Orr from the Housing Finance Agency. We would intend to use the appropriations in the special session that hopefully we'll do tonight first. And then if that is inadequate, then we will look at what other resources are needed and make the appropriate reallocations based on the need up to the amount, up to the $8 million.
Well,
Mr. Chairman.
Well, that's interesting.
Okay, Senator Thomasoni.
Chairman, I want to follow up on what Senator Higgins just said. So where's the $16 million coming from, or the $18
million? Mr. Chair, Senator Thomasoni, at this point, assuming you pass this legislation, it would only be $8 million, the maximum that would need to be reallocated. The reallocation.
From where?
From the reallocation. We haven't made a final decision because part of it will depend upon what we learn in terms of the need and what sorts of resources would best fit the
Mr.
need.
Mr. Chairman, let me rephrase the question. Is the $18 million coming from the reserve, or is it coming out of the Housing Finance Agency?
No, it's not coming out of us. It must be coming out of the reserve.
Senator, I'm not understanding. Are you talking about the
$18
million in this bill at this time?
Yes.
This money is new money appropriated from the general fund, the $373 million that we have currently in the general fund. In addition to that, we're using this money first, and then if we run out and the needs are higher, we have the $16 million that Minnesota Housing Finance has in that program. Then we're going to go to that, but only to the tune of $8 million.
I think, Commissioner, the concern of committee members and myself included would be that with the reallocation, I mean, the governor indicated, I'm sorry, I don't have his letter, I've got the press release, but reallocated about $31 million or $31.8 million. You're indicating that $8 million of that is not needed in terms of housing finance. Is that, or $16 million is not needed? The $16
million?
Let me ask the general question. With the reallocation, you must have come up with those numbers from somewhere as to why you could, and not just for housing finance, but for the other agencies as well. So you must have come up with some numbers from the agencies through the commissioners as to what could be reallocated. And so the question and some of this is certainly in terms of Senator Thomasoni's division, housing finance, deed. I think the concern is, so what are we taking the money from given the tightness of the budget during the session? And Mr. Showalter, you indicated you haven't determined all that, so...
Mr. Chair, let me try to start an answer, and I think I will hand it over to Tanya Orr for a specific example on housing and finance, because the administrative relief is partly based upon an assessment, an initial assessment, and selected agencies are where some of the money could be found, basically reprioritized, or in some instances there are available balances that might be useful in the flood area. That isn't an assessment, a total assessment of the need that was out there in the flood area. That's part of why the special session in the bill is before us today. In the housing finance instance, I think I think we can probably talk a little bit further about what was going on there.
Well, let me, as an example, there was a $5.2 million reallocation from DEED for grants and loans to local units of government. So where we're appropriating $35 million for the investment fund, although that's aimed more at businesses, that's why I'm wondering, so where's the 5.2 coming from if we're going to continue to use that? What's DEED not going to do as a consequence of the 5.2 reallocation?
Mr. Chair, Paul Moore joins us at the table from DEED, let me just say in general, what we're doing with this bill is basically increasing the resources that are available for relief purposes in the flood areas.
the administrative reductions and reallocations and trying to use those balances to respond to some of the flood needs, I think depending on what we find on the ground in the flood areas, maybe additive, maybe all of it, maybe some of it, I think the assessment is an ongoing process that we're continuing literally every week.
And Shalane, I appreciate that, that you're not going to have a sense of, to the dollar, what's needed. Obviously, there are going to be problems that continue to be uncovered, and I think Senator Langseth made that point relative to, the Northwestern floods, 10 years later. The concern, again, is what's not going to be done in terms of our previous appropriations and allocations from the session.
Mr. Chairman, it would be our intent to, should this bill, the disaster bill, pass tonight, to use the money there first. And the reallocations as a backstop if we run into need before we get to the legislative session. A lot of these are programs that we had budget initiatives in the last legislative session, and we want to fund as well. We were trying to, on Friday, try to identify some areas where we could be of assistance and let the people in the affected areas know that there's money available right away. And at that point, we didn't know that we would come to such a quick agreement. So now, I think this becomes, I think most of these agencies are going to use the money that's in this bill first.
Okay.
And Sorry. We can, by the way, we can provide a more detailed assessment of as Senator Higgins has requested.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Hansen, so between the time that the governor put out the press release saying that there was $32 million that was immediately going to the communities and today, that money really didn't go to the communities immediately because now it's going to be on a wait-and-see basis? Do I interpret that correctly?
Mr. Schulwood.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I think that the question is, in this flood, as in past floods, response is immediate, but it also is ongoing. The money doesn't get spent upon the first hour of it being available, as you would well understand.
The housing money certainly could have been. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
And I think the attempt is to make sure that the resources are there so that as the needs are identified, that those programs can operate freely and quickly.
So, Mr. Chair, let me say it one more time. Has the $32 million that the governor reallocated and put out the press release last week saying this money is immediately available, is that money immediately available?
Yes.
Are people spending that money right now?
I'm sure. I don't have a report in front of me of how much is spent. I can get that for you. I would think some of it might be.
So, Mr. Chair,
providing ongoing assistance to the people in the areas. I don't know how much of that from last Friday to now has been spent on these things. Yeah. I don't know.
Chair Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, along those lines, Commissioner.
Probably out the door yet.
I'm still a little confused here because there's been kind of consistently, there's been three different messages so far. But, first it was we're going to spend that reallocation money, and then no, we're not going to. Then we're going to spend the money in the bill first. But there's been kind of three different scenarios buzzing around. Which is it? I think that's kind of what we're asking. I mean, which version it is. And you may not be able to fully answer the question right now, but I would hope in the weeks to come we would have some paper showing where the money came from, where it went, but it's still kind of unclear as to what the answer to the question is.
Well, Senator Murphy, for example, we just taking deed, for example, and we have the business development and public infrastructure where we were going to reallocate $357,000. We have the Minnesota Agricultural and Economic Development Board. We have a number of pots of money that we were going to use to get to local communities as well as businesses. Now, with the legislation you have in front of you, we have $35 million for MIF with some flexible language to get money that you know, more flexibility than these accounts provide that can get money to local businesses. You have in the bill in front of you of the Public Facilities Authority $10 million of GO bonding to help with wastewater infrastructure and things like that. You know, in the we were trying to, in our reallocations, we didn't have the authority to do bonding, so we were trying to identify pots of money that we could use quickly. I mean, I can go through each agency, and I mean, they were programs that didn't quite. I mean, that we were reading the statutes and trying to use them as we could to help the affected people. But now that we are drafting this legislation, we have broader discretion to meet the specific needs of the people in your district.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, I thank you, Commissioner. I get it now. You're going to spend the money in the bill first.
Right.
And you're going to use the executive authority as kind of a backup. And if that runs out before next session, I'm sure we'll be back here talking about it again.
Yes, I'm sure I'll hear from you.
I'm sure you will.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, I would not have expected the money that was reallocated to be actually spent out of the state treasury already. What I would expect is that local officials and agency officials out in the affected area would be requesting those funds, and those funds would be being obligated and encumbered, and it would be in the few days ahead and the weeks ahead when the money would actually be leaving the state treasury. But by having it available, it starts the whole appropriation process.
It's only been 2 days.
From the flood area on up.
Senator Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, is it clear? Yeah. I don't remember the list of the reallocations. I remember there was for example, in the DNR, there was a bunch of money coming from fixing up state park facilities that was going to be. Okay, you have the list. Is there a direct match between those reallocations and what's in this bill? Or you said, that the bill's going to come first, but are there areas where they don't match, that, there may not be something in the bill that would back it up, and so you would be going to the reallocation first? We need to know that.
Mr. Chair, Senator, we're just taking a look, trying to see if there's any specifics. I think as a broad commentary, I don't think there's most of the things that were in the administrative actions are also funded within the flood relief bill itself. DNR is the one place that I would highlight as a possible question mark, just simply because that was the unused bonding authorities that were available by for those specific purposes. And so to the extent that DNR may still want to direct those to Whitewater State Park, even in addition to the monies that are available in the flood relief bill.
Okay, and
so I don't have a precise answer, Senator, but that would be the place I would start looking first.
And Commissioner, Mr. Schulter, correct me if I'm mistaken, but I've got the governor's news release from September 7th, and the back page, and I should have looked at it before I started asking my questions, the back page lists some of the programs I think that you were looking at. So,
yes.
For instance, Senator Anderson and DNR, State Park Infrastructure 2.5, Trails 1.2, Other 0.9. So this was sent to all of us, I believe. So, maybe we could go on, and I'll have copies made of this and distributed to committee members. Senator Tomasoni?
So let me just see if I, now that I have this list in front of me, if I understood what you said earlier. In the area of the Housing Finance Agency, the executive action was to allocate $16 million. However, since we are allocating $18 million in the relief package that's supposed to go on the floor this evening, and you don't exactly know what the damage is and how much will be needed, that the $18 million will be utilized first. And if, in fact, you use the entire $18 million in the area of the Housing Finance Agency, you will then go to the money that we allocated during the regular session and use part of the $16 million up to $8 million.
Correct.
So there's a potential of $6 million for housing. Is that correct?
16, yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, what we can, if you think it would be a good idea, we can, once I presume the bill will pass tonight, we can, I can, by letter to the members of the committee, maybe provide a little more information on if, what we're going to use here versus the reallocation and give you a little more detail.
Okay, that might be helpful, Commissioner. And let me ask the favor. Some of the division chairs are not members of the committee, so maybe you could include our division chairs
we'll
as
just
well.
Disseminate it broadly.
Senator Neville did.
Well, Mr. Chairs, you should circulate it to every
we'll do it there.
Every legislator, not just
right.
us.
Right.
Okay, fair enough. If that's okay, Commissioner.
Yes.
Commissioner, where, Sir Anderson, were you? Commissioner, we're kind of skipping around a little bit, which I guess is fine. Sir Anderson, you had raised a question earlier that I think the particular appropriation that kind of stands out a little bit is the amount to the investment fund, and maybe you could just comment on that as to what you anticipate its utilization.
Well, we, in consultation with,
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Paul Moe, Department of Employment and Economic Development. Minnesota Investment Fund has been used as a vehicle in the past to respond to disasters similar to this one. And in fact, and it provides kind of a flexible source for not only businesses, a wide variety of businesses. I know Senator Senjum asked the question about what's the definition of a business, and we've used it for retail establishments, some nonprofits, and other kind of assistance for businesses. And it's a flexible tool to use in conjunction with other assistance that they might have available to them from either SBA programs or something else. So the proceeds of those loans prepaid to the local units of government for further activity in their community, so they have another resource then when these loans are paid back. Does that answer your question?
yeah, I guess, again, the thing, Senator Anderson, I think your question was just the amount as to why $35 million as opposed to $15 million as opposed to $20 million. Because it struck, I think, at least Senator Anderson and myself, as a pretty significant appropriation for the particular program.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm not exactly sure how the amount came about. I think it's and maybe someone else at the table can answer the process how that was arrived at, but I'll defer, I guess.
Mr. Chairman, what we in consultation and our negotiations with Senate and House leadership as well as our agencies and the affected senators, the reason the amount is as high as it is and the account is as flexible, we wanted to be able to have a flexible amount of money and tried to pick a number as high as we could within reason that we think we could cover the affected business damage as well as rolling in, as Senator Berglund was discussing earlier, the child care facilities. And there's an example with the child care. It was, you know, we had heard estimates anywhere from 500 to 800,000 to maybe a million. Well, if you just specifically appropriated 800,000 and you ran out, you wouldn't have enough. In this case, you know, we have the ability to go a little higher if they need it or a little lower and then use the rest of the MIF money for local businesses or nonprofits, whichever we wish. But the problem and the question you're getting at is, you know, we're 3 weeks after the flood, and you know, we're still assessing the damage, and it'll be a while before we know the total extent. This should be enough, but we'll probably know more as the weeks and months go on.
And Commissioner, maybe a question you can't answer, but again, going back to what Senator Langseth and you discussed relative to the Northwestern floods, that 10 years after the fact of the flood, you know, there's still work that needs to be done. So I'm assuming this wouldn't be the case, but just hypothetically, let's say next July you've recognized, and we'll use the investment fund at $35 million, nothing else is showing up. Does that remain encumbered, or would you suggest kicking it back to the general fund? And it might be a hypothetical that you can't answer for the reasons we.
I think the language, it would stay within the MIF account, and then it would be available for, I mean, at that point, we would be coming into the 2009 legislative session, which we would be doing the 10 and 11 budget. So, I mean, you could reallocate it for the final 6 months of the 08-09 biennium, or it would be, or it could be used broadly for something else. I think you might get a better idea of this, not next July, but you might get a good idea by mid to late session whether you need that entire amount, in which case it may be, if not, it may be available for other uses.
Well, and Commissioner, I realize it's a hypothetical that maybe you can't answer, but again, if we use the investment fund as the example, your preference then would be to keep that encumbered and maybe see where things are for the 10-11 budget, but not say come February of 2008, boy, there's $30 million we haven't spent.
No, if we find out if it's $35 million, this is your hypothetical, and say we find out on March 13th that we only need $20 million of it, then we can mutually decide at that time. I'm not prejudging. You know, I don't know what the needs of our, you know, what we all our perceived needs would be at that time. There might be a higher use, you know, that we collectively decide for the remaining amount.
And I certainly recognize that my questions are clearly hypotheticals, and you really can't predict the future. Sir Neville?
Mr. Chair, any one of you three could answer, but I asked a question before on the MIF fund. I'm not terribly familiar with it, but we're waiving a lot of the requirements. We're having the locals come up with a plan subject to your approval. What conceptually, how do you think right now this money will be given in terms of either grants or loans based on your discussions with the local officials?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, we will enter into some discussions with the local officials about their priorities and the terms that they would like to use. The waivers that this provides for, as I mentioned before, are so we can address a broader spectrum of businesses, including retail and so forth. So it's part of a process to sit down with the local folks to say, what are your needs, what are your priorities, and then establish some terms around that. And some of the money can be used for grants. But that's something that we sit down with the locals about on that as well.
Well, Mr. Chair, do you expect that most of this money is going to be used for loans, or do you expect that the bulk of it's going to be for grants? I guess that's the question I'm trying
to
get
at.
How is it going to be allocated?
Mr. Chairman, until we have those discussions, it's hard to predict how that will spin out.
So it's not uncertain
right now. In the past, the majority
right
has been used for loans.
Okay.
Yep. Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Neville, those are some of my questions, too. And just kind of reflecting a little bit on the floods that we've had, one of the situations that comes up quite often in floods is that FEMA will not – it takes so long for FEMA to reimburse the damages, and whether it's rebuilding a school or whether it's – I mean, there's a whole host of complicated paperwork and assessments that have to be completed before they get, you know, get the money. And so in the case of the East Grand Forks School, I think it was like 2.5 years after the flood before they actually got any money from FEMA. So they ended up, they had to raise a levy and borrow money to until they got the money back from the federal government. And I think in cases of the business community in Roseau, that was a problem too. Only up there, they had some generous contributions from different nonprofits and the Regional Economic Development Committee or Association. But the businesses were struggling because basically all of downtown was wiped out. There's no flood insurance. There's the same situation as you brought up before. And so they ended up having to kind of come out of their pocket, so to speak, take it out of their pocket. So I think it's a good idea if they can sit down with the local communities and try to design something that would reestablish and help these businesses get back on their feet so that they have, you know, some sense of community.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, do we know if there are any residential facilities in the flooded area that will need to be rebuilt?
I don't know if safety has a...
I'm talking about nursing home, group home type of residential facilities.
I don't know. Possibly repaired, but not rebuilt, is what Chris IDR.
And when that rebuilding would take place, or a repair would take place, are there federal funds available through the Medicaid program as well as through FEMA, perhaps?
We'd have to check on that, Senator. I don't know off the top of my head.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, I raise these issues because, again, I am concerned about the mechanism that's been chosen in this bill to administer the assistance to these types of facilities. And nothing against Deed or anybody who works there, but they're just not familiar with the reimbursement structures for these types of programs and the funding that can come from them. So I just issue a word of caution to you all about making sure that the Department of Human Services is involved in whatever funding needs to be provided to the facilities that serve clients through the Department of Human Services.
Senator, or Mr. Chairman, sure. Can I clarify the, as Mr. Showalter reminded me, to be more precise, your hypothetical, the bill itself and the bill language makes it a one-time appropriation. So the money that we discussed, you know, is available within this fiscal year, but if you're going to take it beyond, or if that were your intent, you would need to have specific okay. language making it available for 2009.
Okay, that's it. but Commissioner, again, excuse me, I recognize what I've presented are hypotheticals that really can't be answered right now because, as you've made it clear, we don't have an absolute sense of what the need is or, you know, where things might be 6 months from now. And I'm assuming we're not going to know in terms of next year's legislative session, the 2008 session. There won't be an exact accounting available, at least for most of this, I would assume. I'm not sure if there are other questions for the commissioner. I wanted to ask, maybe Mr. Showalter, you're going to be the best. Senator Murphy? Well,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, and one thing that I do need to bring up, and I think that you're probably aware of it, but I would hope that the rest of the committee would be aware of it. Because of this bill, right now there's about $15 million on the bottom line at MnDOT. That's historically, that's about as low as it's ever been. Because of the $5 million that we're using of cash on the bottom line, the $3 million of debt service obligations, now we're down to about $7 million to operate the department on a daily basis, basically starting at 2009. So, Commissioner, if you can help us figure out something, because $7 million isn't enough to do a appropriate job over there. And I think that we've found that out with the way that the money has been moved around inside MnDOT. 1 week we're doing the crosstown, the next week we're not doing Devil's Triangle, and then one day we're doing Unweave the Weave, the next day we're not doing it. We got a project that's stagnant down here on 494, basically because of lack of resources. Now, other people are going to say other things about that, but most of the delays that we've had, I would say over 95% of them is because of this cash flow issue. And, you know, we're making it even tighter at MnDOT with this bill. So I think the Finance Committee needs to be well aware that $15 million on the bottom line for MnDOT because just 6 years ago it was $26, $28 million on the bottom line. It was historically low, and it's going to get lower.
Commissioner, if you have a comment.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, are you, you're bringing it up because of Article 2 and specifically the I-35 bridge and our need to build it in the next 18 months. And is that your the gist of what you're, why you're bringing it up?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, you are correct, as I would say as always, but most of the time I'll say. There may be a need to have another special session between now and February, whatever day we're supposed to come back.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, we, in the governor's and the lieutenant governor's comments in the weeks prior, we have been assured by our congressional delegation, including Representative Oberstar, who, as we all know, is the chair of the House Transportation Committee. We have been assured that we are going to get the federal government's promised money so that we can are able to cash flow the bridge. The money would come in and would be directed to the Trunk Highway Fund so we can cash flow the bridge. In the last week to 10 days, and I think there was an article even today, and we all can track, you all can track Congress as well as, or better than I can, that there are, yeah. There's some question now as to whether a highway bill, a transportation bill, will pass. They're running into some of the same issues we have here. Mm-hmm. Is there going to be a gas tax? It's all to say that we're less confident now than we were even 10 days ago or last week that we're going to get the money by the end of September or October. As part of our discussions with Senate and House leadership, we had proposed some language giving us the ability, in light of that increased risk of not getting that money, that would allow us to have some flexibility in cash flowing the Trunk Highway Fund from the general fund that House and Senate leadership rejected. So we'll have to, we will,
yeah. And
Senator Murphy, do the best we can and be in touch.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, on that point, flat out said no when I saw that language based on several different things. One of them is a historical perspective on how the commissioner has used authority to move money, which, especially in greater Minnesota, had troubling effects. Anytime you take $100 million out of the road fund in greater Minnesota and spend it in the metropolitan area, it causes a lot of us in the rural area to, you know, take pause. And, you know, just 2 weeks ago, the lieutenant governor was in front of a joint House and Senate committee and said that there was not going to be a problem. There was nothing to worry about. And, you know, meanwhile, all the red flags were popping up from the questions that were being asked. And the commissioner continued to hold the line and say that, nope, we've got what we need to get it done. So we're going to see if the lieutenant governor has the moxie to get it done with what she has available.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, I think 2 weeks ago it was a little it was a little easier to predict that we might get a appropriation bill from the federal government by the end of September or no later than mid-October. And the language that we discussed was incredibly airtight, that the money could only be used specifically for the bridge. It couldn't be moved around and used for anything else.
Yeah. And
we made those accommodations.
Right. And Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, I'm not going to belabor that point, because I think that we have a lot more in agreement here than disagreement. The one thing that I can say is that's one bridge. What are we going to do about the other 11? Wait a minute. I got to do my math. 1,099 other structurally deficient bridges in the state. I mean, is our policy going to be when it falls down, we fix it, and then we wait and for the next tragic occurrence and then fix it? Or are we going to show some leadership and pass a bill that raises and spends about $1.5 billion a year and address all the bridges and all the concerns in transportation, or are we going to do it one at a time?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, it sounds like our last final meeting of our discussions here 2 weeks ago. So
okay, well, we don't want to relive that today, but Senator Tomassoni.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, one last clarification. I maybe you answered this already, but I missed it. There's, assuming this bill passes this evening, there's $45 million indeed in the bill, 35 of which goes to the Minnesota Investment Fund. Is that on top of the $5.2 million that the governor has reallocated, or will the $5.2 million then go away and stay with the small cities program and the rest of the things that are either?
Yeah, Paul, you want to answer that?
Mr.
Chairman, Senator Tomassoni, the $5.2 million from DEED, $2 million of that was from the Minnesota Investment Fund. None of that was allocated or targeted for any particular project. It was because it's a revolving fund that we have from other projects around the state. It was money that was not committed anywhere else, so it's available for this project as well in southeastern Minnesota.
What I'm asking is, are you going to be reallocating money out of DEED from all these five programs, small cities, business development, Minnesota Agriculture, Minnesota Investment Fund, Redevelopment Fund? There's $5.2 million total that would have been reallocated. Will it still be included in the package of relief, given the fact that there's $45 million in the big bill tonight?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomassoni, I believe it will be, and I think the answer that Commissioner gave you earlier was a priority will be, if this passes, that $35 million Minnesota Investment Fund will be used or sought to be used as a priority first, and then if there's additional needs, we'll use the $5.2 million. Again, of the $5.2, $2 million of that was from Minnesota Investment Fund. The other is a combination of some other programs. Again, the list there. Again, those are kind of reverted dollars, money paid back from other programs or not used by a previous project that didn't use a full allocation, so it's available to us, and we can spend those immediately in the flood area.
Okay.
So there's essentially...
Senator Tomassoni.
Let's see if I subtract. Is the $2 million in the Minnesota Investment Fund, is that added to the $35 million? So there's $37 million in the Minnesota Investment Fund plus another $3.2 total available to DEED?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, yes, that's correct. The math is that way, yes.
Mr. Showalter, as long as you're here, Mr. Mossman, I'm going to ask the two of you to compare some numbers. But so, Mr. Mossman, what's being presented in the proposed legislation, where does that leave us in terms of trunk highway and general fund?
Mr. Chairman and members, the general fund budget balance as a result of the legislative actions last session and then the subsequent vetoes after the legislature left would have left the general fund balance at $373 million. This bill that's before you appropriates $80 million from the general fund, so that would leave a general fund balance of $293 million. Based on the February forecast. So there's sufficient money clearly in the general fund for the general fund items here. Senator Murphy was talking earlier about the trunk highway fund balance, and those numbers are, as he stated, $15.4 million was the balance in the trunk highway fund for the end of fiscal 08-09 going into this bill. And there's $8.2 million appropriated in this bill, which leaves the balance at about $7.2 million.
Mr. Showalter, that seems to be correct.
Mr. Chair, that's my understanding as well.
And members, I think Mr. Showalter and Mr. Stinson were gracious enough to spend some time with me a couple of weeks ago, and I think I sent out a memo to members relative to the conversation, which I think all of us have dealt with Mr. Stinson over the last number of years know of his competence and veracity, but I sent the memo out relative to his significant concerns about what's going on with the national economy and what it might mean for us come the session. So obviously any money we use now from the general fund potentially makes things a little bit tougher. The other question I had about where this leaves us if we pass the legislation as is, and again, either Mr. Showalter or Mr. Mossman, what happens with TAILS and 1011? Is there any, most of these are one-time appropriations, but are there any potential TAILS problems?
Mr. Chair and members, these are all, as has been stated, are one-time appropriations in the bill. There is the flood net tax capacity city aid is a one-time cost, but it actually falls in fiscal 10. That's estimated to be $800,000. And then the only items that are in the bill that have ongoing impacts as written is the debt service in both the Trunk Highway Fund and the general fund for the debt service on the bonds that will be issued as a result of the bill. So that's for the general fund about $7.6 million in 10-11 and for the Trunk Highway Fund about $3.8 million in 10-11.
Okay. Members, we're supposed to be upstairs at 5 o'clock. We've got a couple other people. I just wanted to have a couple minutes on the FEMA process from Ms. Eidem and Mr. Kerr from our Homeland Security office. Commissioner Mr. Showalter, I appreciate the time you spent with us. I recognize that probably other than the affected senators, the three senators, the four senators, Senator Senjum, that the pressure relative to this has been placed on the two of you probably more than anybody else, so appreciate your spending the time with us. So are people from the agency here who can just maybe give us a couple minutes? Oh, great. Just a couple minutes on FEMA and how that intersects with what we're doing, because I'm not sure who around the table really has a sense of that, but I certainly don't.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Chris Eide, and I'm the Director of Department of Public Safety, Homeland Security and Emergency Management Division. There are really three major programs in FEMA: individual assistance, public assistance, and hazard mitigation. Individual assistance is also for temporary and emergency housing. It's for other needs such as repairs and personal property, medical, dental, funeral expenses, and disaster unemployment, crisis counseling—the kinds of relief that individuals and families will use. Public assistance is for those eligible private nonprofit entities, city, county, and state government, repairs, debris management, permanent repairs, emergency repairs, and the protective measures such as was talked about in the bridge, the emergency response for overtime for local law enforcement, first responders, the costs of that response for any kind of an emergency. The way that FEMA assistance is scheduled is, first and foremost, is local response for voluntary agencies. So when we have an emergency, the local first responders and voluntary agencies all respond. Those agencies, such as the American Red Cross, the Salvation Army, the Lutheran Social Services, those types of voluntary organizations that are active in disaster, really is the first line of assistance. That's your immediate sheltering. When they'll put you in hotels, motels, or in a sheltering situation and feed you. Then comes any insurance. So if a family has insurance, whether it's flood insurance, homeowners insurance, vehicle insurance, whatever kind of insurance would be eligible, or you'd be eligible under that insurance, then that relief comes next. Then is the federal relief. So it's emergency temporary housing. It's more permanent temporary housing, up to including 18 months in a mobile home. And then it's also repair, including your heating, your ventilation, your water, your sewer, your septic, those types of assistance. And also in that is the requirement for some of the other assistance that comes longer term is also the requirement that families apply for a Small Business Administration loan. Even though they may not qualify, and even though up front they know they may not qualify, they still are required to apply for that Small Business Administration loan. Now, that comes before FEMA then will take care of the other personal property types of things, furniture, appliances, those kinds of things in a home. The emergency housing, the temporary housing, the repairs comes before they have to actually apply for the Small Business Administration loan. FEMA assistance has a cap of $28,200. And as you heard from Senators Lynch and Erickson Ropes and Senator Murphy, there's a lot of damage down there that is obviously more than $28,200 per family. Small Business Administration also gives low-interest loans to families up to $200,000 for repairs or replacement of their home. However, it's not to improve a home. It's to replace a home for what you're eligible for, and up to $40,000 for personal property. So before a FEMA grant, after the temporary housing kicks in, then you have to apply for the Small Business Administration. And if you're eligible for the Small Business Administration loan, then you're not eligible for the other needs assistance, such as a personal property, such as appliances and furniture and clothing and those kinds of things. There is no cost share on the part of the family for the FEMA individual assistance. However, the state pays a 25% non-federal share, so it's a 75-25 split, which is why there is $2 million in the bill today for the individual assistance match. There's also on public assistance, there's a 25% non-federal share. Historically, that has been 10% local unit of government and 15% state. However, in the large disasters, as was mentioned earlier, the state has picked up the entire 25% of the non-federal share. Those private nonprofits that are eligible pick up the full 25%. Historically, the state and the local unit of government have not shared in that 25% for the private nonprofit. That includes everything from schools, nursing homes, nonprofit hospitals, the local rural electric cooperatives. Those are the kinds of private nonprofits, sewer districts. Those are the things that typically are eligible under the FEMA program.
And Ms. Ide, you talked about a cap on individual assistance. I take it there's no cap in terms of an overall amount coming from FEMA.
For the public assistance or for individual assistance?
No, for the public assistance.
There is no cap.
And I assume your division has been involved in working on this legislation, and
correct,
you reviewed it, certainly the FEMA components of it.
Correct. As Commissioner Hansen mentioned earlier, when we go out for a preliminary damage assessment with the FEMA teams, we look at those things that are FEMA eligible. So when you saw the $67 million or the $26 million or the $22 million for the public infrastructure, that really is only the things that we looked at that were FEMA eligible, and we didn't look at everything. We just wanted to make sure that we knew that we would meet the state threshold to qualify for a presidential declaration.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stumpf.
Just a caveat. When they go out and assess what's FEMA eligible, they'll go through like the sewers or sidewalks. And in the case of sewers, they might have a section on Block A that's blown out or washed out, but then the next block is okay. Well, they don't pay for that next block, but the block after it might be washed out. So in the case of infrastructure for communities, whether it's sidewalks, sewer, water, electricity, they only pay for what's actually damaged. And that's where the state's resources really come in and shore up those local communities, because otherwise you can't fix a sewer by putting in a new line in one block and then skip a block and then another one.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, that's exactly correct.
Yep. Chairman?
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, do those caps that apply to businesses also apply to nursing homes?
The nursing Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, the nursing homes are the would be the private nonprofit, and they would have to pick up the 25% cost share. But for the repair, there is no set cap as there is for individual and households.
And are they eligible to pay that 25% out of the ongoing reimbursements they're receiving?
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, that's a good question, and I don't know that answer, but I can certainly find that out.
I mean, normally that's not how we do our reimbursement, but
do you know that?
I don't know where they're. I don't know where they would get a 25% match either. So,
are we talking about state reimbursements? If it's state money,
are you talking about Medicaid reimbursements?
Yes.
Those Medicaid reimbursements would be a non-federal share.
I don't think they would be permitted to match the federal
If you could just identify yourself.
I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm John Kerr, Deputy Director with the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. The normal rule is FEMA will not allow the matching of federal dollars with other federal dollars. It has to be, you know, a non-federal share. So if they're Medicaid dollars, and I'm quite ignorant as to how that program operates, but if we're talking about other federal dollars, I don't believe they could be used as match for the FEMA dollars.
Sir Neville.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to just follow up on my question from before and ask Ms. Heidi about the flood insurance. Most of these people, or many of them, didn't have flood insurance. If they get a loan or aid, either from the state or FEMA, is there something that requires them prospectively to have flood insurance?
Mr. Chair, Senator Neville, they are required to purchase flood insurance for, I believe, a 3-year period.
Okay.
However, their FEMA money can be used to purchase that policy.
Okay. Only 3 years, huh? All right. Thank you.
Sir Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Neville, a few of the places in my district that flooded, at least one that I know of has flooded before. But because of the unusual amount of rain and some of the circumstances that happened when that 3-foot wall of water decided to wash out not only railroad bridge but also old Highway 61 used to, you know, coming north out of Winona used to go straight through Minnesota City. And now it makes a little turn and goes out because they wanted to widen the road, and it's a 4-lane through there. Oh, the old bridge right next to the trestle. They both fell down in conjunction. They acted as a dam. And what happened was that 3-foot wall of water hit that and got diverted instead of going down the regular channel where it normally would have went. And then it hopped up on Highway 61 and figured, you know, this looks pretty good. And down the road it went, and it hit a couple subdivisions that they wouldn't have been, I mean, there could have been biblical floods, and had it not been for that those two bridges falling the way they did and diverting that water, those homes would have never gotten wet. So, you know, I think in some instances there's probably some people, you know, the Katrina thing, the hurricanes that always happen, do you have insurance? 3 years? No, that should probably be like 100 years they should have it. But in some of those areas, in Minnesota City, and then again in Goodview. I mean, that was just it was just weird that it happened that way, and those homes probably would have never gotten wet. So I think 3-year rule is probably a good one for them.
Members, we have to be upstairs in a couple of minutes. So a couple things, and I appreciate your spending the last few minutes with us. Did Mr. Watson just leave? Oh, there's a technical amendment. I don't know if members, again, this committee cannot take any action. So maybe we could just have it distributed. And as we conclude, I don't know, Senator Murphy and Senator Lynch, if there's anything you want to say in conclusion or apparently not. So if members want to see the technical amendment that's going to be presented to the Rules Committee, Mr. Watson has that. Maybe, Jane, you could help distribute it to anybody who'd like to see it. And appreciate everybody's time. And obviously, we'll have an opportunity in the Rules Committee and obviously later on the floor to further discuss this. So, and particularly to Senator Murphy, Senator Lynch, Senator Erickson Ropes, appreciate everything you've done, obviously under very difficult circumstances. So
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Jane, will you stop the tape?
Yeah, that's what Schubert wants to talk to us.
Yeah, this is all just...